Daylight Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for joining us. The recent elections here in Michigan were significant for lots of different reasons. These were the first time that citizens drew our political maps instead of members of the legislature. The result was because of the Michigan Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission, which was created by a constitutional change we made in 2018. Ahead of these elections, this commission went to work attempting to create more representative maps for the state than we've had in a really long time. But this also caused real changes to districts, with some people criticizing the commission for combining separate communities with what they thought were dissimilar interests in favor of restoring some competitive balance. As part of the work, an analysis projected that if Democrats received a similar majority of the vote this year as they had in years past, they could win a majority in both the state Senate and the state House. Democrats, for many years now, have been casting more ballots for the legislature than Republicans, but because of the way that the jurisdictions were drawn, Republicans still retained a majority. The idea behind these new maps was to be more representative of the populace itself. Remarkably, or perhaps unremarkably, the results in November tracked almost exactly with what was predicted was possible. This fall, Democratic legislative candidates received just under 51% of the total statewide votes, with Democrats winning a 2018 Senate majority and a 56-54 majority in the House of Representatives. But does that mean the commission's efforts this year were a total success? Do these results mean Michiganders are more fairly represented in Lansing than they were in the past? Or do these numbers fail to factor in the communities that they are representing? Do they really take account of all of the different things that we try to achieve with representation through the shape of districts in the legislature and in Congress? There are some folks who are still really dissatisfied with this process, also dissatisfied with the outcome. They feel as though there are some communities that are now underrepresented in ways that they weren't before, even though overall these maps are more representative of everyone here in the state. That is where we want to continue the conversation here on Detroit Today. And we especially want to hear from you, our listeners, while we're talking about this. What do you make now that we're through the first elections under these new maps drawn by citizens of the redistricting process? So do you think that worked the way that you expected it to? Are there things that you would change, either about the process of drawing these maps or about the outcomes? Are there things that you would have this commission pay more attention to than they did? And if there are, what are those things and how would you like them to show up in this process? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation as well. We've got two members of the Michigan Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission with us to discuss this today. Rebecca Zatella is the chair of the commission. She is a non-affiliated voter from Canton. Rebecca, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen. Welcome, or thank you for having me.
Sure.
And I'm no longer the chair, by the way. I'm now just a commissioner.
That's right. That's right. We're gonna. That's one of the things that's gonna change, right?
And
Anthony Eade is also a commissioner with the group, and he is a non-affiliated voter from Detroit. Anthony, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you. It's great to be on again. Good morning, Rebecca, as well.
Morning.
So I'm going to start with both of you giving me an assessment of how you think these maps performed. There were several points in the day on election day and certainly in the days after that I thought of you and your colleagues and how you were taking in all of the things that were happening statewide. There were so many surprises. There were things that that really changed here in the political landscape in Michigan as a result of the elections. And I kept thinking, wow, the folks who drew these maps have to be thinking, well, this is what we created. I don't want to assign any particular emotion to that in favor or against, but I am curious about how you felt as you watched these maps perform for the first time. Rebecca, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a mixed bag for me. On one hand, the maps performed as we expected them to, which just gets into validating how powerfully the drawing of maps can influence an election. So in this case, for the most part, the maps reflected that almost 54% of voters who voted Democratic in this election. And that was good to see that we had that representation of how the voters were voting being aligned with what the results were. However, you know, there are concerns that I had about these maps. I expressed them to you the last time I was on the call. I also expressed them in a dissenting report specifically about the ability of Black candidates to be elected and for Black voters to elect their candidates of choice. And then I also had some concerns about the Republican lean on the House map. And I think, unfortunately, these election results have seemed to validate those concerns. So I still have those concerns. They're still out there. You know, this is just one election, so it might change as time goes on. But, you know, it was sort of a mixed bag for me. I think we did better than the prior maps, but those maps also were not intended to be representative and were not intended to be fair. So I think benchmarking us against the promise of this commission, I think we maybe fell a little short.
I'm going to come back to you and want you to expand on that idea for sure, Rebecca. But first, Anthony, give me your reaction to what we saw on November 8th and you know, in the outcomes of the elections. Was this what you expected?
Well, you know, it's what the data showed the result would be given the turnout. So in that regard, I'm quite happy with how the election played out. We were in a situation previously where, due to gerrymandering, there was often the case where the folks who got the most votes didn't hold the most legislative power in our state. And I think what we can say now is that at least the will of the voters is being respected now that we have maps that followed the constitutional criteria that the Michigan citizens passed via Proposal 2 in 2018. So, you know, they're not perfect. I think they have some issues, but I think they're significantly better than what we've had in the past. And, you know, I happen to think that, you know, you can't let perfect get in the way of progress sometimes. So I think overall we did a good job. And hopefully in 10 years, when the next citizens commission comes into play, hopefully they can build upon our work and improve it even further.
So, Rebecca, I'm going to come back to you now. You mentioned your last appearance on the show, which I believe was in January. And I think you mentioned your concerns about using general election voter data and not primary election voter data in determining African-American representation in these districts. And you foresaw a reduction in African-American representation, especially in the state Senate. Let's go back to that and apply the filter of the outcome of these elections. How do you feel now about that? And what's the opportunity, I guess, for the commission to do anything to try to rectify this? I mean, it's another 10 years before we draw new maps.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel happy about predicting an outcome that came to pass in this situation. I think at the last time I was on, I did express concern that there were going to be declines in Black Detroit representation. And that unfortunately has come to pass. I don't feel happy about having sort of predicted that being the outcome. I would have rather have had a little bit better representation for that Black community in Detroit than what we ended up having. I think, unfortunately, there isn't a lot that the commission can do about it now. The maps have been approved and they're set. So short of court action, this is the maps that the city of Detroit and voters throughout Michigan are unfortunately stuck with through 2022. Like I said, I do think they're more fair than the maps that we had in the future, or I'm sorry, in the past, but it does concern me that that came at the cost for Black representation, particularly in the Senate and in the House as well.
Yeah. Anthony, what's your sense of that part of it? And I guess what you think could be different the next time that might produce a different outcome?
You know, this is a topic where my colleague and I respectfully disagree a little bit, which is okay. We have a diversity of ideas and members on the commission. But I'm not sure if the data has panned out necessarily that there is less Black representation. I read an article in MERS last week saying the House number has gone unchanged. It was at 14 Black folks elected previously, and it's at 14 now. And when you take into account that, you know, for the first time in Michigan's history, we have a Black House leader from Detroit in Joe Tate, and a Black I believe Erica Geis is going to be serving now as the president pro tempore for the Senate. You know, I think if you ask Black folks in 10 years, are their legislative priorities going to be heard more or less than in the past? I think the answer is going to be more. And, you know, we have opportunity to elect districts in this map, and it's my hope that in future elections over the next 10 years, hopefully more of those do end up electing Black candidates of choice.
Yeah. Rebecca, Anthony's right that in the House, the number is not different. It is different in the Senate. And those were the districts that people were, I think, more concerned about because they stretched across boundaries that typically we don't do here in Southeast Michigan. They stretch across 8 Mile Road, right? The big border between Detroit and its northern suburbs. They stretch in across some other jurisdictions as well. And I mean, we can talk a lot about why that was done. But overall, I guess you're still concerned, I guess, with the outcomes, even though it is really the Senate that's going to look different in that way. I get the sense that for you, this is about process, though. This is about what's prioritized and making sure that that you're creating the opportunity for everybody to be represented.
Well, I think Commissioner Eid hit right on the point, and this was something that he said in the last call as well, is that he believed that there was going to be a marked increase in minority representation compared to what we've had in the past. And I believe that was the thought process of many of the commissioners, is that they believed by going with these very, very low percentage of minority voters in districts that we were actually going to increase minority representation.
Right, because essentially, and we should explain that quickly for listeners, that you essentially spread Black votes into districts that before didn't have very many of them. And so it creates the opportunity for more districts to elect a non-white person.
Exactly, because the prior districts were what we would call packed, is they would have 70, 80, 90% African-American voters in a single district. And so we stretch those districts out and reduce them to percentages of 35 and 40% with the belief that that was going to create more opportunity districts and more capacity for minority voters to elect their candidates of choice. And I think just looking at this election result, that has not happened. There is not a marked increase, in the words of Commissioner Eid, mm-hmm. in the minority representation. Now, you know, certainly there's going to be people who are smarter than me who are going to dig into these numbers, look into the primary results, and, you know, draw conclusions. But I think just on its face alone, what the commission hoped and believed did not materialize in the way that they believed that it would happen. And that's where the concern is, right?
Yeah.
There.
And this is going to be a question for both of you. This is the first cycle of these new maps. We'll have four more at least before we get to, you know, redrawing them again. Is this a dynamic that will change over time? And I guess the reason I ask that is because one of the things that these maps reflected that I think has not gotten a lot of attention is the migration of African Americans into suburban communities. And, you know, one of the things that we did not see an awful lot of in this cycle was African American suburban candidates raising their hands saying, hey, I'd like to represent this district. And yeah, it stretches into Detroit as well. Is this something that might transform as we get deeper into this redistricting cycle? Anthony, I'll start with you this time.
Yeah, you know, I'll just start by saying, as someone who is a minority, this issue is very important to me. But I think just the fact that we're talking about this on public radio, you know, goes to show how much better this process is than the process we used to have, where they would make these decisions in backdoor.
And we had no idea how they were doing.
We had no idea, you know. So I certainly appreciate, you know, my colleagues' points on these issues. They're good points, and they need to be something that is looked at in the future for future commissions. As far as your question, you know, we'll see what happens over the next 8 more years that these maps are going to be in play. This was a major reconfiguration of the maps, probably the biggest reconfiguration we're going to have, you know, in quite some time, because our commission decided to start from scratch, whereas future commissions, you know, they might decide to expand upon our work now that the base is a more fair map. Yeah. So, you know, it's going to take time. And I think over the next 8 years, over the next few primary cycles where people know what their districts are a little bit more and know what the boundaries are a little bit more and know their communities a little bit more, I think we will end up seeing that take place.
Yeah. Rebecca, is this going to get better as people learn these new districts and learn the political landscape on this map?
Well, you know, again, my concern with that is, you know, we saw with Brenda Lawrence, she decided not to run. And certainly there was speculation. I don't know that she's ever confirmed this, but there was speculation that the reason why she did that is because her district had been redrawn in a way that she did not think she was going to be elected. And so I think, again, it's still the same concern. Are minorities going to even try to run? I mean, running for office is very expensive and time consuming, and people don't do it if they think they're going to lose. So are those, you know, Black members who moved out to suburban areas going to even try to run if they're in a district that's only 35% minority? Are they going to honestly believe that they have a chance to win? Because that's going to be a self-selection process in terms of not having those candidates out there if they don't feel there's a reasonable chance that they're going to be able to win. So I think, you know, time's going to tell. But to me, it's not enough to say, sure, there's a chance. People don't just run on a slim chance. They run when they think there's a realistic possibility they're going to win.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure we've given that confidence to minority candidates who might be interested in running.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission members Anthony Eade and Rebecca Zatella. Also want to get to you on the phones and on social. Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. Terry in Detroit, you'll be up next. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Two members of the Michigan Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission, Anthony Eade and Rebecca Zatella. about how the maps that they helped draw played out during the very first election of this redistricting cycle on November 8th of this month. I want to hear from you as well about what you think about the maps that were drawn by citizens instead of politicians for the first time and the outcomes they produced. 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Let's start with Terry in Detroit. Terry, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning. Wonderful conversation as usual, Stephen. I want to say that I am optimistic about the maps. I also want to kind of disabuse this notion that black people's interests can only be represented by other black people. I think that every politician listening to this show today needs to understand that people's interest in Detroit, black people in Southfield, black people in Macomb County, everyone's interest needs to be represented justly and fairly, and no matter what your race is, the expectation is that you do that. And this has been an age-old debate about how do you get minority representation. Mm-hmm. It's an important conversation, but we have minority representation in Southeast Michigan in both the 12th and 13th district. It changed, but it is still minority representation. And I just want every senator, every House member elected in this last cycle to know that they have a responsibility to all of their constituents, no matter their race.
Yeah, Terry, that's a really important point. I'm glad you called to make it. I would also, though, say that I don't know that it's an either or. In other words, the idea that everybody who's elected to public office ought to think about all their constituents is not at odds with the idea that it's also important to have people who look like you in office as well, because of the common experience that that so many of us share because of our ethnic backgrounds. But you're absolutely right that and we don't spend a lot of time reminding people who are not members of minority ethnic groups that, hey, look, you've got to represent everyone. I want to give our commissioners a chance to respond to that, too, though. Rebecca, you go first.
Oh, I completely agree with her. And, you know, we have seen that Sri Thanadar was elected in a minority African-American district, and presumably those voters felt that he was going to represent their interests, even though he may not be from the same ethnic background as them. So I absolutely agree with 100% with what she said.
Yeah, Anthony? Are you still there, Anthony?
Oh, yeah, I was muted. Sorry. I completely agree as well. I think it goes to show that, you know, candidate of choice doesn't always match up with the minority group in the area. You know, you have two candidates there where, you know, Sri Thanadar won the majority of votes in Detroit proper. So he was likely the black candidate of choice. We don't know those numbers for sure yet, but I believe that is the case. So, yeah, you know, representation comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors here in Michigan. And you know, in Detroit particularly, you know, for the past three elections, we've elected a white mayor, and there's no district in that race. So, right. You know, it happens sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Terry, really appreciate your call. Let's go quickly to Gary in Auburn Hills. Gary, we've only got a couple minutes left, but go ahead.
Hey, quick question. Mm-hmm. Thanks for putting me on. Isn't the problem really in the primaries? These districts that we're talking about are electing Democrats, but they're tending to elect white Democrats versus descriptively representative black ones. And I think maybe the choice, the solution is ranked choice voting in the primaries, never mind in the rest of the elections, but just specifically focusing on primaries to fit with these districts.
Great question, Gary. Give the commissioners a chance to respond. Anthony, you're up first this time.
You know, it's a multifaceted issue, right? You know, you have primaries where you have, you know, quite a large number of people running, you know, whereas the result could possibly be different if, you know, the competition was whittled down to a fewer number of candidates. Now, I don't think that's the commission's job to determine who runs for office. Mm-hmm. But ranked choice voting is certainly something that might help with that, or runoff voting or something like that. You know, another thing that might help is the community kind of self-selecting a smaller pool of candidates. That could be a way to go about it too, but you know, I'd certainly be interested in looking at if runoff voting is possible in Detroit.
Yeah, I think that's an important reminder that what we did in 2018 creating this commission was an important reform, but reform is not something that ever ends, right? I got to constantly be thinking about what else could improve the process and therefore the outcomes. Rebecca, I've only got about a minute left, but I want you to respond to Gary.
Yeah, I'm actually in favor of ranked choice voting as well. I think often we have voters who maybe don't want to vote for one of the top two candidates and they vote for a third. And it would be very interesting to actually have them be able to reallocate their votes if they, you know, maybe they want to vote for a green candidate or a libertarian candidate and, you know, still want their vote to count in case that candidate doesn't have enough to press on. So I'm in favor of ranked choice voting. Yeah.
Okay, Rebecca Zitella and Anthony Eade, it's always great to have you guys here to talk about the really important work that you guys did on the Redistricting Commission, and we'll keep checking in with you, I'm sure, as we get deeper into the cycle. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Stephen. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, that is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when Rana Faruar, author of the book Homecoming, is going to join us to discuss why the future economy is local. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.